This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 29th of November 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 29th of November. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are Peacocks killed and hay destroyed in fire, Farmers' £330,000 cow death battle, and Parish wants playing field as village green. So may we now have the story behind the first headlines, please, Heather.
Peacocks killed and hay destroyed in fire. A Hampshire farm fire burned a barn full of thousands of pounds worth of hay and killed pet peacocks who lived inside. Little Metland's farm was engulfed in flames on Monday evening. The cause is unknown, but up to £30,000 of hay was burned, a barn wrecked, and three peacocks killed. More than 100 firefighters were called into the fire at the 100-acre farm in Dean, near Bishop's Waltham, at around 6:15 p.m. yesterday. They're in shock. Well, we all are, said farmer Andrew Ruddle, aged 57, who inherited the farm from his late mother, who passed away last year. Andy was away from the farm when the fire began, but his wife was there and she braved the blaze to save a peacock, but could not help them all. The Chronicle asked to speak to Mrs. Ruddle, but she was too upset to talk at this time. And Andrew said, well, I wasn't here at the time, but my wife and two kids were. They ran out to put it out. We had some animals in there, peacocks, just on the end. We managed to get one out, but sadly the rest did not make it. He continued, I came back about 15 minutes after it happened, and obviously it was pretty bad. We moved stuff out the way the best we could. I called 999, and they came as quickly as they could. The farmer did not know exactly how much the fire had cost him, but estimated the total value of the hay to be up to £30,000, as well as the unknown cost of a new barn. The fire service estimated the barn contained around 500 tons of baled hay, but Andrew says it was all insured. Questioned about the performance of the fire services, the farmer said they did fairly well given the situation they were in. They were kind and considerate. Andrew said he would be helped with a clean-up by his friends, including one he was storing a boat for, which was destroyed in the blaze. The fire will take a long time to burn down, and even then it will take months to recover and clear up. He said, just gotta wait for it to burn out and scoop up all the ashes. Got a lot of friends who are willing to help. There were two contrasting pictures, one of Andrew with his tractor in front of a barn full of baled hay, in all very good condition, and then a larger one of the sun rising in the morning on a completely wrecked barn and a mountain of black ash.
Farmers' £330,000 cow death battle. Herd culled after water supply issues. An award-winning dairy farm is battling for hundreds of thousands of pounds after its herd was culled due to interruptions to water supply. Hiltonbury Jerseys, famed for its award-winning Jersey cows, had to cull part of its herd after two southern water outages led to several cows becoming ill. Before the winter of 2022, there were 125 cows at the farm in Compton, but illness and disease due to a lack of water, which eventually had to be brought in by the fire services and Water Direct, caused 25% of them to be put down. It's the second outage that really did it. In January, we noticed something wasn't quite right, farmer Oliver Neagle said. Neagle, 52, who rents Atwood's Drove Farm from Hampshire County Council, said the surviving cows were only just starting to milk normally again. Oliver said, the cows that have been here have taken a massive hit And it's only in the last 2 months that they're coming back to what they're supposed to be doing. As an average, the cows produce 23 and 25 litres a day. That's what I would expect. They were down to 15, 16, 17 litres on average. Oliver and his wife, Charlene, 49, were told by their insurer to hire a dairy consultant who estimated the cost of the cull was £330,000. As well as the money claimed for the immediate loss of the cattle, the couple are looking for further compensation due to the loss of future calves and the hit to milk production. The farming couple have so far received 65% of the £330,000, but they've had to fight insurers and Southern Water for 2 years. Oliver said, "It never crossed my mind that it would have been an issue." Their insurer first refused to recognise their claim before backing down and paying out due to an error. Oliver has been a dairy farmer all his life, following on from his parents and grandparents. Since 2022, the business has been relying on its side hustle, a farm shop, to keep afloat. Without it, they probably wouldn't be here, to be honest, he said. The farm shop is a small building, and inside they sell four main products: pasteurised Jersey cow milk, unpasteurised Jersey cow milk, Charlene's homemade ice cream, and beef from their cows. The couple say farmers are undervalued by society, but they have a core community of supporters who help them fight the crisis facing British farming. The farm was recently shortlisted for Dairy Farm of the Year in the British Farming Awards. A spokesperson for Southern Water said, "We understand the impact these incidents have had on the farm and provided additional support to them in 2022 and 2023 in recognition of the issues they face. We received a formal letter of claim which we issued in August 2024.
And parish wants playing field as village green. A playing field in Winchester will be recognised as a village green if permission is granted by Hampshire County Council. An application has been submitted to have the popular Davis playing fields, located near the Badger Farm Sainsbury's, recognised as a central hub for the area. Badger Farm Parish Council applied for the accolade because residents have been using the space for leisure and sport for a period of at least 20 years. There is also a playground on the site, which is just off Lark Hill Rise in the residential neighbourhood in South Winchester. Residents' right to object was also included in the application. Any person wishing to object to the registration of the land as a town or village green should send a statement of the facts on which the objection is based to the Countryside Access Team at the above email address or address to Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester, SO23 8UJ, on or before the 3rd of January 2025. Any representations that are to be taken into account by the authority in reaching a decision on the application cannot be treated as confidential and will be copied to the applicant for comment and may be disclosed to other interested parties. In 2021, the Davis Kickabout, as it is also known, was bought at auction by an undisclosed private purchaser, raising fears it may have been bought by a housing developer. Residents in Badger Farm had assumed the David Kickabout was owned by the City Council after the estate was built in the 1980s. The transfer was never made and the land was sold when the owner, Davis Development, folded. And this is includes a map of the Davis playground, but also a picture of it, which shows that the lovely playground area, a large green area with Badger Farm houses around it on three sides, and a beautiful playground with plenty for the young to do. And on the fourth side, it overlooks the area known as Bushfield Camp by some, and over to St. Catherine's Hill. And there is a path from St. Cross with steps all the way down over the hill to reach this lovely green playground area.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum. This will be followed by announcements and what's on. This is the death notices. Barnes, Middleton Morris, known as Barney, sadly passed away on the 2nd of November 2024, surrounded by loved ones aged 83 years. Bartlett, Brenda Marion Bartlett, sadly passed away at the Royal County, Hampshire County Hospital on the 28th of October, aged 86. Baisley, Michael Lewis Henry of Southwick near Fareham, died aged 97 on the 15th of November 2024. Beard, Jean Margaret Beard, passed away 10th of November 2024, aged 93. Bowler, Fred, sadly passed away on 17th of November 2024, aged 88. Denim, Julia Ann, Julie, passed away peacefully, surrounded by family at Winchester Hospice on the 28th of October 24, aged 82. Haler, Norman, passed away peacefully following a short illness on 8th of November 2024, aged 87. Lee Michael David Mike passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 12th of November 2024, aged 70 years. McGrath Linda Christine passed away peacefully at home from frailty and Alzheimer's on the 12th of November, aged 69. Mould Sandy Mould passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on 4th of November, aged 77. Piper, Barbara Piper, died peacefully in hospital on the 4th of November, 2024. Torb, Mildred Torb, passed away peacefully on the 5th of November, aged 97. Woods, John Woods, fell asleep on the 8th of November, 2024. Dearly loved husband, dad and granddad.
Christian comment, Jesus is coming, writes the Reverend Philip Crinks. One of my clergy friends has a magnet on his fridge. It has a picture of our Lord on it. And across the top it says, Jesus is coming. And across the bottom it says, so look busy. It's a joke, of course. And indeed the last thing Christians should be doing in the season of Advent, which begins on Sunday, is adding even more busyness to the world. Many people already have crammed schedules and overlong to-do lists. If there is work to get busy with in Advent, it is spiritual work. We call the season Advent because it is about getting our hearts ready for Jesus' coming. We can understand this as preparing ourselves to celebrate Christmas, the pivotal event in history when God in Christ comes to dwell among his people. But as importantly, we are preparing ourselves for Jesus' future return, when he will be coming, with clouds descending, thousand saints attending. In Luke 12, Jesus tells his disciples to be like servants who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet. This is the watchful preparedness of Advent, so that we can open the door for him as soon as he comes and knocks. But then there is a twist. The disciples might expect Jesus to go on and emphasize that when the Master comes home, then if they have been watchful, they will be able to welcome him. But actually, Jesus says, "Blessed are those slaves whom the Master finds alert when he comes, for he will fasten his belt and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them." The reason to be watchful and ready for God's coming is not what we can do for him, but the amazing things that he wants to do for us. Okay, you might say, but I have been waiting a long time. In fact, I have pretty much given up. It's too late. Jesus says, do not give up. It may be late from a human point of view, but it is not too late. If the master comes during the middle of the night or near dawn and finds his servants alert, blessed are those slaves. It may look like the situation is lost and God will not come into your life, but you might be surprised. All you need to do is start preparing. The Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. Suddenly the situation will turn, the light will break in. We can prepare for this by starting to walk in his way. When we do something to care for others, we prepare to receive his care for us. When we forgive someone else, we prepare to accept his forgiveness of what troubles us. When we stand up for what is right, we become citizens of the coming kingdom of God. Jesus is coming. Don't just look busy. Prepare yourself for all that he wants to do for you. The Reverend Philip Crinks.
And now we go to letters to the editor.
And this first... The first letter in this week's Chronicle is entitled A Toxic State, and it's been sent in by Tim Loudon. Was it a coincidence that the recent unheralded visit to Winchester by the Archbishop of Canterbury at the time of his resignation clashed with the Dean's notice of retirement on May the 1st, 2025? My attention has been drawn to an excellent article in the Spectator magazine, November the 12th, What's Wrong at Winchester Cathedral? I urge people to read this if they can, because it spells out in detail some disturbing issues which need to be aired and which have brought the cathedral and its musical life into a state of toxicity which I thought would be impossible to achieve. For example, and I quote, 1. The congregation has been making it clear of their discontent by going on hunger strike, refusing to go up to the altar for communion. 2. Who authorised the departure of the organist without the proper consent at all levels, one of the top organists in the UK? With 2 years left from a 25-year contract, this is as foolish as you can get, because a future top organist will be aware of the insecurity of the position and indeed the future of cathedral music at Winchester. Imagine the festive season, now upon us, being blighted by the spectacle of hunger strikes and walkouts. This debacle has happened on her watch, so she is responsible and must do the honourable thing as well and not hang around until May next year. She should leave now and save herself from derision, humiliation and further damage to the cathedral music. Bring back George Castle for a start. Unless all the bad apples are removed from office now, the cathedral will suffer irreparable damage. If the Archbishop can do the honourable thing, so should the Dean. The time has come for decisive action and start again before it is too late. To have any chance of removing the acrid fumes now prevailing in the cathedral and replacing them with the rich aromas associated with Christianity, urgent action should be taken now, in the hope that this can be done by Christmas. That letter is from Tim Loudon, Sutton Manor, Sutton Scotney.
And Tetcher Jones writes, well done. On Sunday, our electricity went off at about 10:30 a.m. and came back on again at 7:30 p.m. A massive tree had brought down a major power line close to our home. Well done, the SSE and other engineers who braved Storm Bert and got things fixed. It wasn't nice out there. We appreciate their hard work. And well done to the Hinton Ampner Arms, the Hinton Arms in Cheriton, who squeezed us in for Sunday lunch, even though they were fully booked. The joys of rural life. And that was from Tetcher Jones, Lane End, Oslebury.
Nurture nature. Have you been out for a walk in and around Winchester recently? If so, you might have spotted blue plaques, reminding us about the loss of biodiversity. As a child, I remember that the sound of the cuckoo was a sign that spring was coming. I now can't remember the last time I heard a cuckoo. What about the number of birds in your garden? Or think about butterflies and bees. The sound of nature has been replaced by the noise of a nearby motorway, or simply by silence. There is a QR code on all the blue plaques which take you to a website providing more information about the endangered species that were once commonplace in our British countryside. We often feel powerless about the things we can do. However, growing flowers and plants in our gardens that attract bees and butterflies, demand from your local parishes or churches to create space for rewilding, or writing to your local MP or Winchester City Council, are only a few examples of the things you can do. You could even take it further and become an active supporter of the Climate and Nature Bill. This bill is not just about holding the decline of biodiversity, but commits to reversing the loss of habitat and endangered species. Julia Stoll, Oliver's Battery Road South, Winchester.
Where it began, writes E.Z. Mayer. I hate to say it, but Winchester College is heavily implicated in the John Smythe case, Chronicle, November the 21st. That is where it all began. John Smythe was known to be abusing students at Winchester College, but it was deemed to be an internal matter. As far as I know, the police were not involved. In serious cases of abuse, outside agencies should always be involved. Self-regulation is ineffective and always has been. That letter is from E.Z. Mayer, East Acre Week, Winchester.
Eileen Berry writes, think hard. Good news first. I would like to congratulate the Hampshire Chronicle staff on the renewed and interesting publications of every kind. The reason I say this is because you have made your back pages alive with stories and items, whereas in the past these pages have been empty. You use everything that you have got. It's much, much more interesting to someone like me, who has always supported the Chronicle, whether I'm in it or not. So, that is the good news. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if that good news could be followed on by other most important things happening here in the city of Winchester? Sensible decisions on the Andover Road being made. The closing down and the running down to be halted in the hospital here, which was in its day one of the finest. You wouldn't find anyone who was frightened to go into hospital here. That is not the case now. We're coming up to the festive season. I hope you will agree that I'm not just talking about Christmas, because I have been a campaigner about this for years. We live in very, very troubled times. We should look at the long-term and the long-term population explosion to agree that we won't be able to cope without our hospital. So, whilst I wish everyone, all your readers, all people who are concerned, the very best for Christmas and the New Year, think hard and long about the developments being proposed for this beautiful city of Winchester. And that was Eileen Berry, Prior's Dean Road, Hairstock.
Carol Orchard writes about an additional risk. Mr. Freeman, speaking with the authority of a bus industry professional, made some good points about the bus station in his letter last week. On this subject, I'm sure many would agree with him. However, on the subject of the experimental Romsey Road pedestrian crossing, although he admits it could do with a little tidying up, he hasn't explained to ordinary drivers, pedestrians and cyclists why it was ever designed to be so elaborate and confusing. Firstly, why are traffic lights needed when on other bus routes into Winchester, Southgate Street, Stockbridge Road, Eastgate Street, pedestrians manage with simple zebra crossings where they have priority, but in practice generally exercise this right with discretion? Secondly, preventing vehicular traffic from turning left into Romsey Road from Clifton Terrace has, I believe, created new rat runs along West End Terrace and Clifton Road, neither of which is suitable, and along both of which pedestrians, often school children, are now at additional risk. Carol Orchard, Northview, Winchester.
Both possible, writes Phil Gagg, who is the chair of WINAC Transport and Planning Action Group. We do not have to choose between buses serving the station and buses serving the centre, Chronicle Letters, November the 21st. We can have both. We can reorganise bus services so that they all connect with trains and other bus services at the station and run through the centre too. To do this well, though, we need to find smart ways of reorganising bus services, both routes and timetables, and we need to rethink how the Winchester Movement strategy can support bus services. City buses could be rerouted so that they all pass both the station and the centre. Many already do. It would be good to dispense with the long pause in the centre on some cross-city buses. Town services could be integrated with the underused park and ride to provide more frequent services along the main corridors and reduce passenger waiting times across the city. Meanwhile, less frequent district services should be retimed to provide good connections at the station with trains and other district bus services. This would make through journeys between, for example, Alresford and Southampton, Bishops Waltham and Basingstoke, Rumsey and Farnborough, or Otterbourne and Andover, not only easier but also quicker. We need to develop better public transport connections between the districts, market towns and major local destinations outside the district, but in a way that will not worsen current bus links with Winchester city centre. Buses from Bishops Waltham, Alresford and Southampton, for example, could run through the centre and terminate at the station, and buses from Rumsey and Andover could connect with trains at the station and then run on to the centre, possibly terminating at the leisure centre. St George's Street could become a two-way bus spine with good real-time information and comfortable waiting and refreshment facilities. It would be really important to reserve enough space at the station to accommodate all connecting district buses at the same time, to enable easy interchange with trains and between buses. That letter is from Phil Gagg, Chair of WINAC Transport and Planning Action Group, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And Peter and Maggie Rees write, "A vital vote. It is nearly 40 years since we cradled our darling adopted 6-year-old daughter Georgina in the hours before her death from leukaemia. She was being cared for at home by us and her brothers, as well as the palliative care team from Great Ormond Street Hospital. This was privately funded by a couple whose daughter had died in similar circumstances. Even with the best pain-relieving medication, her last few days were painful, distressing and heartbreaking as the disease progressed. Georgina died peacefully in her sleep. She had the best clinical nursing and palliative care from the NHS. Nothing could have been prescribed that would have prevented her final suffering. Palliative care is still only available as a publicly subscribed, privately funded service. It is still not part of the NHS. The Assisted Dying Bill about the personal right to choose an assisted end of life has its second reading on Friday, November the 29th. Over 75% of 10,000 people polled have said they would support the law to be changed to make it lawful for a terminally ill person to seek assistance to end their own life. Only 14% were against. The bill proposes that competent, terminally ill adults should have the right to choose a safeguarded route to an end of life. This would be assessed by two independent doctors and a High Court judge. End-of-life care will become safer and more compassionate. The bill will also guarantee safety measures to prevent coercion with robust monitoring of individual situations. Please contact whoever is your Hampshire MP. Ask them to attend Parliament on Friday, November the 29th, to listen to the debate and vote for this bill, And remember, this is just one of 11 further stages before the bill is granted royal assent. That was from Peter and Maggie Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Tony Gaster writes, "Time for action. I am a strong believer in the need to act now over climate change. There has been a great focus on EVs and heat pumps. I read this week that the first half of November was unusually cloudy and still, so not much electricity from renewables. We have to be thankful for natural gas. Oh, and those countries linked with ours to supply us with power. Such a shame that we are so badly managed that our country can't even produce enough power, whilst at the same time pushing for driving and heating to be done by electricity. Some may remember when we were a leader in nuclear power. Isn't it time those in charge learnt more about technology?" Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Jill Collymore entitles her letter "Place for Jane." "It is very good news to hear that from 2025 we will be able to visit the house in College Street, number 8, where Jane Austen died in 1817. As far as her statue is concerned, rather than putting it in the cathedral close, which is large and surrounded by buildings and therefore not so easy to find, a better place could be in the green space opposite number 8 in College Street. Having the statue there would also help to identify the house." So writes Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester.
Now we have first person.
And today this is "Blind Leading the Bland" by Joanna Lewis. "Do you ever forget the first time you see your dad on a dance floor? I don't think the 11-year-old Sophie will. She's the daughter of Chris McCausland, who single-handedly is saving the beleaguered BBC show Strictly Come Dancing, now in its 20th year. Chris is blind, but has been the wowing the judges and the public alike with his routines expertly choreographed by dance partner Diana Boswell. It's truly remarkable to behold. I remember similar feelings, never forgotten as a teenager. The occasion was a family dinner dance at a local hotel. My dad was our superhero, a bit of a daredevil with no fear of heights. He would leap across rooftops and scale any tree. He drove a motorbike. He built stuff. He could tame the most aggressive dog. There was nothing he couldn't turn his hands to, until we forced him onto the dance floor. His two-step shuffle was rigid arms, clenched fist, and eyes down. It left us transfixed. Family honour was saved by Mum. She, in contrast, was light and rhythmical. It was as if she'd just stepped off the set of Saturday Night Fever. The final revelation of the night came when a thunderous "It's Raining Men" by the Weather Girls filled the air. Suddenly, all the Welsh aunties put down their bitter lemons and stood up. Like an army of disinhibited nuns, they owned that floor. They particularly liked the "Hallelujah," of course. I'm not sure if they made chapel the next morning. In this year's Strictly Come Dancing, the lovable Chris McCausland is defying dance expectations in similar breathtaking ways. Chris sadly lost his sight between the ages of 6 and 22 due to the hereditary condition retinitis pigmentosa. He was never able to finish his degree course. Nevertheless, he's gone on to have an impressive career in stand-up and acting, appearing on programmes including Have I Got News For You? To be honest, I'd stopped watching Strictly a few years ago, but I have been lured back. Watching this amazing man, as Diana Boswell describes him, evokes a roller coaster of emotions. Utter awe and respect often give way to a sob fest. Even the judges and his dance partner get overcome with emotion. His couple's choice routine included a poignant total blackout sequence, so we could briefly enter his dark world. When the studio lightning returned, he was spinning Diana around in a spectacular lift. Oh, I don't know how you are doing this, said Judge Craig afterwards. As students at the Royal National College for the Blind have said, he is smashing down negative stereotypes of what visually impaired people often can achieve. Often people think blind people can only tune pianos, added one student wryly. Mm-hmm. So true. Mm-hmm. It's not that disabled people need inspiring, Chris insists, but the public need to understand they are way more resilient, creative and problem-solving than other people need to be. For some in the disability community, such an extraordinary success story places heavily expectations on them. This kind of disability tourism has its cringe moments too. Despite Chris triumphing in the Paso last Saturday, many fans accused the BBC of bad taste by making him compete in the group Sambathon Challenge. He came last, of course. Will Chris save Strictly for another season? Or have the bullying scandals and this year's grope compare awkwardness become too distracting? Maybe the format is simply too tired and trapped in self-parody and it should be gently retired. We All Shine On was the song Chris chose for his memorable Couples' Choice dance. It's about kindness, people being nice to each other, that things can turn out better than you think, he said. Such sentiments could give us a lift in these gloomy times, and maybe it will be the final catchphrase for the so-called Strictly family if this does turn out to be the end of the glitter ball journey.
And now we have Chronicle comment.
And he writes, time to secure the future of open space. Land ownership is always interesting, and there's a fascinating if slightly bizarre case in Badger Farm. A segment of hillside land on a 1980s estate whose ownership appears to have fallen through a crack in the pavement. Some 30 years after the estate was built, chunks of land, including Davis Kickabout, were sold at auction in 2021 to persons unknown. As we report in the paper today, local people assumed the Davis Kickabout was owned by the City Council. But for reasons probably lost in the mists of time, the formal transfer was never made, and the land was sold when the owner, Davis Development, folded. The land south of Larkhill Rise, next to Loudon Close and Honeysuckle Close, had been public open spaces for decades. But now locals are concerned it could end up in the hands of housing developers. So an application has been made by Badger Farm Parish Council to have the land technically declared as a village green, so ensuring it will in theory be protected from development forever. It seems strange that land where people exercise their dogs and where children play should be under some vague threat, but there we are. Anyone can have their say by writing to the Countryside Access Team at Hampshire County Council before January the 3rd, and we would urge people in Badger Farm to make their feelings known to the council. Otherwise, the ownership of the land could get more than interesting.
Now we go to Belgarum.
And the headline is Pirate Capers for Charity. Passers-by on Winchester High Street have been treated to a pirate-themed spectacle, courtesy of two local performers. Jelvis Hodgkiss, also known as Jacob Sparrow, and Teddy Gameson danced to a thumping techno version of the famed Pirates of the Caribbean theme. It's all in the name of charity. Jelvis explained that he wants to give back to children in need. Pudsey Bear was present, also dressed as a pirate, after they helped him when he was diagnosed with mild autism and a chromosomal disorder as a young child. Explaining the choice of attire, Jelvis said, "We've gone with the pirate theme because it's a good way to get kids entertained. They're going to meet a pirate like, ooh, Mum and Dad, look, it's a pirate, arr!" So we dressed up as iconic pirates. Obviously, we have gone with Will Turner and Jack Sparrow. Jelvis and Teddy will be putting in a huge shift having started at around 10 a.m. and intending to finish at 8 p.m. They will be accepting donations for charity. Recently, BBC Children in Need has raised more than £39 million following its annual fundraising show. At the end of the show, co-host Vernon Kay thanked viewers for their generosity as he announced that a total of 39,210,850,000 has been raised so far.
Right, now, Lighting Up Times ends on Friday, 29th of November at 7:42 a.m. and begins at 16:04 p.m. On Wednesday, the 4th of December, it ends at 7:49 a.m. and begins at 16:02 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news.
And here we have death and disruption as Storm Bert blows in. Chaos and disruption were caused by the arrival of Storm Bert in Hampshire this past weekend. The storm hit the county early on Saturday, November the 23rd, with the Met Office issuing weather warnings for wind and rain throughout the weekend. Multiple events were also cancelled, with the weather causing the death of one motorist after a tree fell on his car near Winchester. Police were called to the scene on the A34 southbound between Kingsworthy and Winnell at approximately 7:47 a.m, where the driver, in his 60s, was found and confirmed dead. A silver Skoda Kodiaq was also damaged, but no other injuries were reported, with lengthy road closures while the scene was cleared. Police would now like to speak to anyone with information about this incident, and particularly anyone with relevant dashcam footage. Another tree also fell in Dean Lane at the junction with Old Hillside Road in Teg Down early on Sunday. No injuries were reported. Multiple power cuts were reported across the district, including in Bishop's Waltham and near Bramdean. Multiple train delays were reported for services attending Winchester Station, including a service to Portsmouth Harbour, which was delayed by 23 minutes, and the cancellation of services to Manchester Piccadilly and Southampton Airport Parkway. The foul weather also caused the cancellation of several events, with the Winchester Christmas Market and the Cathedral Close closed on Sunday due to concerns over the strong winds, with a potential risk of flying debris and chalet damage. A cathedral spokesperson said, "While the closure was disappointing for all involved, the safety of visitors, staff and traders remains the market team's utmost priority." The roof of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital was damaged due to the wind, with roof tiling becoming dislodged. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust informed members of the public of the damage in a Facebook post on November the 25th, in which they also warned that some areas of the hospital car park and walkway are now out of bounds for safety reasons. And this includes a photograph of the tree across Dean Lane near the junction with Old Hillside Road. And the falling of this tree is so enormous that you can't even see that there might have been a road there at some stage.
Choir presents the very best Christmas music. A choir is set to bring the very best of Christmas music to a town in Hampshire. Alsford Community Choir will perform a festive programme on December the 14th at St John's Parish Church in Alsford. The show will feature music by Benjamin Britten and Guy Turner, as well as traditional carols. The choir, consisting of 110 members, will be joined by the Royal Marines Association Ensemble, known for their brass sound. And the evening will also feature various soloists on harp, flute and piano, all led by conductor Keith Clark. The choir will perform later at Romsey Abbey to support Maggie's cancer charity. Established in 2012, Alresford Community Choir has gained a reputation for its diverse repertoire and sold-out shows, performing pieces like Handel's Messiah, Mozart's Requiem, and Carmina Burana. In May, the choir plans to present Beethoven's Ninth, the Choral Symphony. Keith Clark said, "It's always a great privilege to conduct this choir, and this time of year has special meaning for so many of us. The joy of a concert in the Christmas season, making for a wonderful evening." Sadly, all tickets for this first performance at St Luke's Church in Alresford are sold out, but they will be performing again in May.
RAF hero honoured on 103rd birthday. An RAF veteran who flew Lancaster bombers and Spitfires received a Guard of Honour to mark a milestone birthday. Former flight engineer Brian Wardell celebrated his 103rd birthday on Saturday and was given a Guard of Honour by Children of the Sea Cadets. He was also joined by representatives from the military, Air Force and Navy, as well as the Mayor and Mayoress of Eastleigh at Sunnybank House in Fair Oak. Brian said, "I'm so happy to see so many people here today. It means everything to me, really, to see so many people and cards. Yesterday some local school children were visiting me, and that was lovely as well." As Brian walked through the care home to the communal area of Sunnybank House, where he was presented with a birthday cake, the 103-year-old playfully stopped and inspected all those who formed a guard of honour for him to celebrate the big day. Sea cadets saluted Brian as he walked past, which was often reciprocated with the veteran jovially turning their caps or moving their neckerchief. Brian's son, Peter, said, "Dad has always had a wicked sense of humour. The staff here love him. They always have a laugh together. He's got a phrase from a Joe Dolce record, 'Shut up at your face.' He uses that quite regularly with the staff, to the point where they now use it with each other. Dad has a love of humour and a love of life, and I think that's kept him going all these years." Brian was married to his wife Betty for more than 50 years before she passed away 20 years ago. Peter added, "He's a remarkable man, and I'm so pleased and thankful to everyone who's made today really special."
Community Pantry helps those in need. Peter Simmons College has announced that more than 2,000 items have been taken from its community pantry since it was established in November 2023. The pantry, which provides essentials such as food, toiletries and cleaning materials, vulnerable students and staff. The most popular items include tinned tuna, deodorant and pasta sauce. A second pantry was set up in January 2024 at the college's Ashurst building to provide additional support. Student Welfare Office Alison Sanson said, "We've been blown away by how students have taken the spirit of Simmons Community Pantry to their hearts. They have embraced it and have run with it, working incredibly hard to make sure that it's reaching those who most need it and to assure its smooth running throughout the academic year." And this is accompanied by a photo of three of the students, Marcus Arnold, Ed Addis and Anushka Samantha, standing by their supplies with lots of interesting looking foods and tins and pasta sauces, and big beams on their faces to be so pleased to help the community.
Nominate good causes. Hampshire residents are being encouraged to nominate charities for a share of £120,000. The Benefact Group's Movement for Good Awards is giving away the money as part of its annual 12 Days of Giving Christmas campaign. Each day, 10 charities will receive £1,000, with 120 charities benefiting in total, and nominations are now open. And the more times a charity is nominated, the greater its chance of being selected. Draws will take place every weekday between December 5th and December 20th, And last year, more than 16,600 people from Hampshire nominated good causes to receive an award.
Marwell animals enjoy taste of snow. Marwell Zoo has been transformed into a winter wonderland as the first cold snap of the season blanketed Hampshire in snow. On Thursday, November the 21st, the snow-covered zoo created a magical atmosphere, delighting both guests and animals. Snow leopards, Amur tigers and birds were spotted frolicking in their frost-covered habitats, thriving in the chilly weather. Other animals also revelled in the wintry conditions. A Siamang gibbon was observed scooping up and tasting the fresh snowflakes, whilst a Sitatunga climbed into its feeding bucket, which had been filled with the freshly fallen snow. Marwell Wildlife is a conservation and education charity committed to maintaining balance in the natural world. There's just 1 week to go until Marwell's festive winter lights experience, Glow Marwell, returns on Friday, November the 28th, which is in fact the very time we're recording this. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of the most wonderful, gorgeous snow leopard sort of staring into the distance.
And a breast walk ever to aid cancer charity. A charity walk is returning to Hampshire for the third year in a row, and people can now sign up and spread Christmas cheer. Against Breast Cancer's Breast Walk Ever will take place on Sunday, June the 8th, 2025. The event will see participants walk one of the three routes, all of which start at the IBM Sports and Social Club in Hursley near Winchester. The routes will follow waymarked trails, including the Itchen, Pilgrims and Monarch's Way. The walking challenge has been a fixture since 2014, raising more than £300,000 for research into secondary spread breast cancer, much of which is conducted at the University of Southampton. Richard Martin, the charity's head of fundraising, said, "We cannot wait to welcome our fantastic supporters once again to the IBM Hursley Sports and Social Club. Breast Walk Ever Hampshire is fast becoming a standout fixture in the local event calendar, and we're so looking forward to being back in such a beautiful part of the world, close to where the majority of our research happens." In the lead up to Christmas, Against Breast Cancer is offering the first 50 sign-ups across all distances a place for just £50 without a fundraising ask. People can also give the gift of giving this festive season and buy that special someone a Breast Walk Ever entry. Participants will be treated to regular support stops and a complimentary massage at the finish line, along with a medal. Free parking is available at the event HQ in Hursley. All walkers are asked to raise funds with an initial target of £100. In the UK, more than 55,000 women and 370 men are diagnosed with breast cancer each year. And this is accompanied by a photograph. It says that the walking challenge has been a fixture since 2014, and it's clearly a warm, sunny day, as everybody with the numbers on their fronts is beaming at the people just before they're about to set off on their challenge in their running shorts and t-shirts.
Joy as market returns to the city. The Winchester Cathedral Christmas Market returned with a bang this year, and some say it's the best yet. The Cathedral's Christmas Market features stalls from companies across Hampshire, as well as the wider country, and expects more than 130,000 visitors. Ron Knowlton, aged 68, came up from the Isle of Wight to see the Christmas market, which he's visited for many years with his wife and friends. He said, "Well, we live on the Isle of Wight, but we've come up to the market to get a bit of Christmas spirit going. It feels like the first day of Christmas, even though we're still in November." Ron is somewhat of an aficionado when it comes to Christmas markets, having visited many throughout Europe. Asked what his favourite thing was so far, he said, "The llama pictures, made with fabric, we were really taken by them." He was also impressed by the huge glühwein vat and said, "We've been to European Christmas markets. We've never seen that before. A wonderful copper vat to hold the wine." Salisbury jeweller Lulu and Boo were set up in the chapter house lawn, selling their recycled designs to intrigued customers. Jeweller Corinne Willock, aged 50, said, "This market's been rated in the polls in the top two or three markets in the country. And her company, which is named after her daughter and her dog, has been coming for the past 3 years and thinks it's great for business." She said, "It's always a nice market, lots of people, lots of loyal and returning customers I've had over the years. And there's a lovely atmosphere. The location of it beneath the cathedral is lovely." The Test Valley Distillery, an award-winning Hampshire-based company, was doing a roaring trade under the sunlit cathedral. Co-owner and founder Sarah Nelson said, "We're the local distillery here in Winchester. We've got three award-winning gins, all gold medal winners, including the winner of the London Dry at the World Gin Awards." Sarah works with her husband John, who co-owns and founded the business with her. And they came to take advantage of the Christmas trade and promote their first rum. She said, "We like to offer people a little taster. Try before you buy." And their rum was featured in Rum of the Month in the Craft Gin Club's July issue. And the market is open for a month, running every day until Sunday, December the 22nd.
County warns it faces bankruptcy by 2027. Finances at the County Council are on a cliff edge, with a new report warning that without more government support, it will declare itself effectively bankrupt in 2 years. A Cabinet report has revealed that Hampshire County Council is considering issuing Section 114 notice for 2026-7, since it will not be able to deliver a balanced budget as it is legally required to do. In the last year, the administration has been working on how to generate the extra income it needs to plug the now £182.2 million budget deficit for 2025-26. Some of its saving proposals, which aimed to generate an extra £84 million, were strongly criticised by residents. However, despite the savings generated, only £66 million will be delivered in 2025-26, leaving a budget gap of £116.2 million. The report said that given the size of the shortfall, quote, "it is pretty clear the County Council has reached the point where it is unable to find the level of savings required to balance the budget on a recurring and sustainable basis," unquote. Although the gap is significant, the council is confident that it can balance next year's books by possibly using all the £92 million set aside in the budget bridging reserve, effectively the council's piggy bank, which would leave a gap of £24 million that the council thinks it could find. By using what is left in the bridging reserve, the council will not have that life jacket in the upcoming years. As the report said, this would seriously deplete financial resilience and leave the council with very little wriggle room. If the Cabinet and full council do not consider drawing the £92 million, other options such as further lobbying to the government with possible exceptional finance support or a council tax referendum, which rise is normally capped at 5% without one. Hampshire County Council said that each 1% increase in the council tax was worth around £8.2 million. Therefore, a 15% increase would generate an extra £82 million that would help the administration to close the 2025-26 deficit. However, the position worsens for 2026-27, where a gross budget deficit is forecasted to be £266.4 million, which could be reduced by £185.3 million by SP25 Phase 1 savings.
Temperatures rise after a flurry of snow. Snow has struck the Winchester area, but people hoping for a white winter will be disappointed as temperatures look set to rise. The city and surrounding area have seen their first and possibly last snowfall of the winter, after flakes began dropping from the Thursday's grey skies. It became as the UK experienced particularly cold weather this autumn, and yellow weather warnings for snow and ice were issued nationwide. Winchester might not have received a white deluge, but nearby Swanmore has, and pictures show the village covered in snow. Although there will be wintry showers in northern parts of the Winchester area, temperatures will rise to 5 degrees. This weekend, temperatures will rise even further, reaching 15 degrees on Sunday, and there is a high chance of rain. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Hunter Inn in Swanmore with its iconic picture of a man on horseback accompanied by his dog out hunting on the chimney. And the whole of the inn and its garden is covered in white snow.
Pub strengthens its links with the community. It's the family-run historic pub that once housed the village fire station and remains at the heart of the community. The Coach and Horses at Sutton Scotney has teamed up with the local church to house a pantry for those in need, and staff are gearing up for their popular upcoming Santa breakfast events. The pub, which has just been named in the Good Beer Guide for 2025, boasts a rich history, a traditional menu of pub classics, and some superb real ales. Locals were instrumental in April 2022, helping David Dobson and Brenda White when they took over the rundown pub, and locals remain vital now to get the Coach and Horses back to its best. Landlord David said, "So many of our locals joined together to help keep the pub open when we stepped in to take it over, and we've spent hard but rewarding weeks cleaning and decorating. Our opening day was incredible. At one point, the queue to get in snaked around the car park. We are so grateful for the support we received and continue to receive from the local community. Getting to be a part of the local community is definitely a bonus. And as well as this, we get plenty of travellers from afar, staying in the accommodation, parking their camper van in the car park, or just popping in whilst on their travels. It's so enriching getting to know their stories, a bit about where they're from, and share a bit of our local village with them too." The pub started life in the 1700s as an old coach house. In 1939, the barn, which had previously housed coaching horses, was repurposed into the Sutton Scotney Village Fire Station, and it remained until the mid-1970s, when the new current station was built next door, and the thatched fire station, the only one of its kind in the country, has been transformed into 3 guest rooms. In a nod to the past, they're named after fire engines Dennis, Comer and Bedford. The pub features in books showing the history of the Dever Valley, which is sold in aid of the church. There's a kids' play area in the excellent beer garden, an open fire, regular live music, a bouncy castle in the summer and a monthly quiz night, and there's a photograph of 2 beaming people who are in front of a beautifully stocked bar. This is David Dobson and Brenda White, the new owners.
County forecasts 96% carbon footprint reduction. Winchester City Council is set to reveal a forecasted 96% reduction in its carbon emissions. The announcement is expected when figures are released in early 2025. In 2019, the council declared a climate emergency, subsequently focusing on reducing its own carbon emissions, whilst also aiding organisations and communities across the district in their efforts. The council recently released a short film showcasing the culmination of these efforts. The anticipated reduction equates to a total of 1,596 tonnes of carbon, which is comparable to the annual electricity usage of 2,855 average households. This figure includes all emissions directly controlled by the council, such as energy consumed in its buildings and usage by its vehicles. The council has committed to accelerating its green initiatives, embedding the climate emergency within all its operations. The commitment is reflected in its council plan. Recently, it was granted a silver accreditation as a carbon literate organisation following a comprehensive staff training programme.
And Ministry orders urgent jail repairs. The Ministry of Justice has ordered urgent repair work at HMP Winchester, along with the installation of new CCTV and the recruitment of more specialist staff. The measures come after the jail received an urgent notification in October, with inspectors finding high levels of violence, poor living conditions, and inadequate support for prisoners, including issues with drugs and self-harm. One former magistrate described the prison as a rotting, festering cesspit, telling how prisoners trap rats in buckets as the vermin run freely between the cells. In another instance, a prisoner was able to remove his cell door, while other inmates have reported that the walls in the Victorian building are crumbling. The prison service has now published a new action plan to bolster safety and conditions at the prison. This includes more frequent cleaning schedules and urgent repairs to cells damaged by mould and vandalism. Meanwhile, a rapid audit of cells has removed 9 from use, ensuring all accommodation is fit for purpose. The prison will boost security by completing a comprehensive survey of its CCTV systems by the end of this month to ensure they are operating effectively. In addition, a new drug strategy will be rolled out to tackle the high number of illicit drugs entering the jail and help more offenders beat addiction. We are supporting the prison and its staff who are working hard to deliver improvement in challenging circumstances. This action plan will ensure they have the support they need. The report also highlighted only around a quarter of prisoners were offered a phone call when they arrived, while some men waiting weeks to have their phone numbers approved. To address this, all new prisoners will be offered a telephone call within their first 24 hours, and systems will be improved to ensure calls can be made to families outside normal business hours. This will help offenders maintain communication with their loved ones, which is crucial to their rehabilitation. Extra staff have also been deployed to increase prisoners' time out of cells and improve access to the education and training they need to turn their backs on crime.
October the 2025 target for food recycling. Winchester residents will get a new food waste recycling service as early as next October, it's been revealed. A timescale has been penciled in for the 1.8 million service as the government pushes for local authorities to collect food waste from households at least once a week by 2026. Presenting the plans at a City Council scrutiny committee on November the 12th, Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, The introduction of food waste collection will start from next October. We've already undertaken the procurement required, but we need to look at finding appropriate bins and caddies and also to find the appropriate space for the vehicles when they arrive. The council is purchasing 9 12-ton food waste collection trucks and an electric refuse collection vehicle, RCV, that will be used by Biffa, the service operator. Councillor Lerney continued, The introduction of food waste collection will significantly reduce waste, which currently goes for incineration and has become very controversial, so it will lead to a considerable carbon saving. We're keen to move forward sooner rather than later, but pragmatically, so we don't incur excessive costs. It's a significant change for our residents, and I think it's important we get it right. During the committee, questions were raised about the project by Green Party member Councillor Danny Lee, who said, "Well, the costs of this service have been touched on. There are many studies that show food waste collection and other improvements to waste collection services save less carbon emissions than other greener and more valuable carbon reduction programmes." When the project was given the green light in June, Council Leader Martin Todd said, "This is an exciting step forward. We're going to introduce a food waste service that's reliable, high quality, working with residents and ensuring we have a service that meets their needs and will benefit the environment and the state of our planet."
MP to talk with farmers. The MP for Winchester is to meet with Hampshire farmers to discuss the impact of the inheritance tax they must now deal with after the autumn budget. Danny Chambers MP met with representatives of the NFU Winchester Farmers on the afternoon of November the 19th in London to discuss the farming community's response to the budget, inheritance tax and planned protests. Mr. Chambers, a member of the Liberal Democrats, grew up on a family farm and has long worked with farmers as a large animal vet specialising in horses prior to becoming an MP, which is his team says offers a rare perspective amongst elected MPs on these issues. Speaking to the Chronicle, Mr. Chambers said, "The problem is that farms are worth quite a lot of money if they are sold, but actually they don't bring in a lot of money. A lot of farmers are working for minimum wage. Food security is national security, and if we have a government that does not understand the farming economy, we are going to put farmers out of business." The MP placed much of the blame at the feet of the Conservatives, who, he says, did damage to the farming industry through their policies, which didn't take into account the everyday reality faced by many farmers. He added, "Now we've got a Labour government which does not seem to understand farming either. It's been a tough old time for farmers."
Joy as Guide Centre is saved from closure. Campaigners are celebrating victory in their 18-month battle to save a 65-acre Guides Activities Centre faced with closure. A charity launched in a bid to buy the Fox Lease facility near Lyndhurst and secure its future has successfully purchased the property from Girl Guiding UK. Fox's Future has bought the entire site, including an elegant Georgian mansion, with the help of a government grant. Guides and Brownies from across Hampshire have used the centre for decades. Hazel Warwick, Chair of Trustees, said, "We've raised huge funds, in excess of £4 million, in the 18 months since the charity was incorporated. Our most significant thanks must go to the Department of Housing, Communities and Local Government for its total grant award of £1.78 million from Round 3 of the Community Ownership Fund. We couldn't have done it without that significant and valuable contribution, which has enabled us to acquire the historic site for the benefit of the community. Our sincere thanks also go to our secondary grant funders, a number of which are locally based or have community roots in the New Forest, and we are very grateful for their capital support of our project." Hazel has also praised everyone else who has helped the charity secure the future of Fox Lease. She said, "The acquisition phase of the project has been a series of challenges, and it has taken our community of supporters to get us over the purchase line to where we are now." Trustee Emma Stevens added, "We can't wait to get stuck into phase two, bringing the next generation of Foxleys to life. Our aim is to open on a phased basis for camping, residentials and community use from mid-February 2025. In a message to potential users, she added, "We'll be sharing information on booking in the coming days, but please do start planning your visit for next year now, as early bookings are hugely important for us." Fox Lees has been under threat since May 2023, when Girl Guiding UK unveiled plans to close 5 activity centres across the country to cut costs. The decision to axe the hugely loved site sparked shock and outrage, with more than 57,000 people signing protest petitions. In September 2023, Girl Guiding UK came under fire during a parliamentary debate hosted by Gosport MP Caroline Dinenage, who described the proposed closures as bizarre. Julian Lewis, MP for New Forest East, added, "I have been watching this development disaster with increasing horror." And now there is a photograph of Fox Lees, which was gifted to Girl Guiding in 1922. And it's a picture of 5 Girl Guides outside in a lovely muddy area with balls and things to play with, and their yellow and red tops. And luckily, I see they all have mud-coloured leggings nowadays for these events.
Bulbs planted to mark Jewish Day of Action. Members of Winchester's Jewish community braved Storm Bert to plant bulbs as part of a National Day of Action. As in previous years, they planted bulbs, in this case 1,000 wood anemones, in Hillier's Haven in Abbots Barton. This was part of Mitzvah Day, the United Kingdom's largest faith-led day of social action. In previous years, the group have planted bulbs on the weirs in the city centre. They started planting bulbs 10 years ago at the Sir Leslie Scott Garden by the City Mill, and 5 years ago moved to Hillier's Haven, where in the past English bluebells and daffodils have been planted. And there's a smiling group of people in Wellington boots and very sturdy shoes, hats and hoods and real wet weather gear out in the green planting their bulbs.
New restaurant adds spice to High Street. A new fast food restaurant has opened after much anticipation on Winchester High Street. For the first time, Nando's, which specialises in Portuguese-style peri-peri chicken, will serve customers in the city, with residents' opinions actually split as to the merits of the chain. Manager Adrian Grabowski, who lives in Basingstoke, was already busy showing customers to their seats at 12 p.m. on the opening day, November the 20th. He said, "Coming to Winchester, I have met lots of people who have told me how excited they are to have a Nando's here as well. We have a full team. There have been a few little problems, but I think we can expect it to be a rather busy restaurant in this part of town. I expect to be busy through the entire day." The Nando's unit is part of the huge space where Debenhams once was. Along with Nando's, 2 other chain restaurants will open for trade after the building sat empty for years. Next door, world-famous American burger chain Five Guys will open on Monday, December the 2nd. Work is currently underway to kit it out with its distinctive interior. While in the last former Debenhams unit, work is underway to transform it into Pizza Express. However, the chain has not yet announced when it intends to move in from its current location on Bridge Street.
Council agrees to buy 146 homes. Winchester City Council has approved plans to buy 146 new affordable homes on a new housing project for an undisclosed sum. Civic chiefs rubber-stamped the purchase of the homes at a cabinet meeting on November the 20th. The properties are part of the 2,000 home Kings Barton estate, currently built by Carla Homes. The council won the deal after a bidding war with other interested parties and has decided to keep the price of the housing confidential, but it will be many million pounds. This is part of the council's plans to deliver 1,000 new homes by 2032. The council intends to rent the accommodation under housing allowance rates, which currently range between £525 per month and £825 per month. Councillors discussed concerns around the acquisition of the homes in depth at a scrutiny committee on Tuesday, November the 12th. At this meeting, Green Party member Councillor Danny Lee expressed doubts that the quality of the buildings might not be up to scratch. He said, "My concern is about how we manage the energy gap, the poor quality of a build which probably would apply to these acquisitions. We know that standards out there in modern buildings are not up to a very high standard. We already need to avoid buying buildings that suffer high running costs for our occupants with higher carbon emissions for what our district. So how do we assure we avoid the pitfalls if we don't get this right?" These issues were echoed by Conservative Councillor Caroline Horrell, who said, "We want to ensure the same build quality for the homes that are sold as the houses that are being offered to the council as affordable. So can the council ensure that in this deal they are of the same quality?" Cabinet members reassured councillors that the buildings would be of high quality and that they would be distributed evenly throughout the King's Barton estate. Former City Councillor Ian Tate said the council should not be using the 146 houses towards its 1,000 home target, but building its own homes rather than relying on developers who have to build affordable homes as part of their planning permission. City Councillor Leader Martin Todd said, "I think residents need to know that this council takes the delivery of community facility and infrastructure extremely seriously, and we will continue to put what pressure we can on the process to ensure that it's delivered at pace and the standards that residents in future, our tenants, deserve." And it's accompanied by an area of the King's Barton development, which has also been part of a recent scandal about the Andover Road that we've been reading, of course. And this shows a road with a lot of new houses and some green land in front of them. But there is still a lot of space to be used there.
Council backs call for phone ban in schools. Winchester City Council has voted in favour of a motion to urge county bosses to ban smartphones in schools. At a full council meeting on November the 6th, councillors voted unanimously in favour of the proposal, many discussing their own experiences around their children's use of phones at school. Presenting the motion, Lib Dem councillor John Tippett Cooper spoke of an increasing alarm and concern among parents. He said this motion calls on us to urge Hampshire County Council to adopt guidance for smartphone-free schools across our county. Councillor Kathleen Becker and I, who bring this motion tonight, are both parents of young children and increasingly concerned by the increasing body of evidence indicating that unrestricted use of smartphones in schools can negatively affect academic performance and have serious impacts on the mental health of young people too. He added, "Some statistics in this area are not just alarming, they're downright terrifying." And he went on to cite a selection of these statistics, which he said confirmed parents' worst fears. 75% of UK 15-year-olds have been sent beheading videos. That teenagers with problematic smartphone use are 3 times more likely to have mental health issues, and that student focus drops by 20% if a smartphone is nearby, even if it is switched off. This presentation was followed by a general debate on the negative impact of smartphones on the young before the council voted, and 29 councillors were in favour of the motion, with not a single vote made against it. And one of those who agreed with the proposal was Councillor Jackie Porter, who laid a portion of the blame for kids' issues with smartphones squarely at the feet of parents, saying, "Parents who now think of it as the norm to have their phone in their hand all the time may just change the next generation's feeling about their smartphones. I've watched parents at nativity plays, watching the whole thing, through their phone, not actually looking at the children. No wonder we have young people with mental health issues. If all they're worrying about is, oh, does it look good for that screen? Not, does it look good for my mum?
Tina Thorne returns in tribute to Cancer Mum. A challenge in memory of a woman who ran more than 100 marathons is returning for its sixth year. The Teenathon Challenge started in 2019 in honour of marathon runner Tina Jury, who lost her life to cancer. Tina continued to run and train even during her chemotherapy treatment and inspired others to do the same. The annual challenge sees people commit to 30 minutes of exercise every day in December, including Christmas Day. This challenge can be fulfilled in any form, whether it's a home workout, a brisk walk, a gym session, or even running alongside Santa's sleigh. The organising committee for this year includes Tina's daughter, Anna. She is encouraging everyone to participate and exercise at their own level. Anna said, "My mum always wanted to have fun whilst doing sport and would encourage others to do the same. When she was really ill and found just climbing the stairs difficult, it made me realise what a privilege being able to move and exercise is. My mum would love the Teenathon community and all the funny, active, inclusive things that happen. Since its inception, Teenathon has raised more than £50,000 for charities Wessex Cancer Support and Winchester Hospice, whilst fostering a supportive community both online and face-to-face. It means a great deal, says Anna, to know that there are supporters taking up the Teenathon Challenge who support us year after year. Everyone at Wessex Cancer Support wishes them the best of luck for this year's event. To join the challenge, a donation of £31 is required, or £15.50 for the under-16s. Links to the Just Giving pages and more information can be found on the Teenathon Facebook, and that's spelt Teenathon, Tina, like the name, T-I-N-A, and then Thon, T-H-O-N, Facebook and Instagram pages, or on its website, teenathon.co.uk. If participants miss a day, a £5 fine can be paid. Teenathon is supported by local clubs, gyms and personal trainers who are providing free classes and online workouts for participants. Run Walk Sport in Oliver's Battery is supplying lilac buffs for all participants so they're easy to spot whilst they train.
And Buttercross repair work plans take a step forward. Proposed works at the Buttercross in Winchester have taken a step forward. After years of discussions with Historic England, Winchester City Council has received formal scheduled monument consent for cleaning and repairs to the monument in the High Street. Permission was granted after the submission of a specialist commissioned report by Philip Hugh and Associates to ensure the sensitivity of the repair programme. The proposed works include stonework repairs, the removal of moss and ingrained dirt, and the installation of humane pigeon deterrents. The process of selecting a suitable contractor has begun, and it is expected that work will commence next year. Believed to have been commissioned by Cardinal Beaufort, Bishop of Winchester, from 1404 to 1447, the Buttercross is a holy cross, although following its construction, the monument also served as a market cross, and butter, cheese and eggs were sold from the steps that surround it. Winchester City Council's Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, Councillor Lucille Thompson, said, "This is great news for the city's historic Buttercross, which has been a treasured landmark in Winchester city centre for hundreds of years. These important works will take care to both conserve it and to protect it for the years to come.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to your editors for selecting the extracts this week, and to be the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell. Goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.